all the planners here. So, all right, I'm going to call this meeting to order of the South Jordan Planning Commission for Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. And we're going to do a roll call, but we have a full quorum. First time we can say that this year. Want to welcome Commissioner Harding. She was sworn in prior to our meeting, so she can fully participate in our meeting this evening, and all of us are here. So that's good. So anything that ties 3-3 basically the motion fails. So it will need to be 4 votes or more for any motion. Just FYI for anybody watching online or in attendance in the council chambers this evening. So we'll go to item number B, the motion to approve this evening's agenda. Before we accept the motion, are there any changes anyone needs to see, or staff, any last second changes we need to make to the agenda? I'm not aware of any. If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the agenda as published this evening.
I will second that. We have a motion by Commissioner Hollis, a second by Commissioner Gage. All in favor, please say aye.
Yes.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion passes 6 in favor. Taking us to item C, the approval of our minutes from the March 11, 2025 meeting. Thank you, staff, for putting those together. Hopefully you all had a chance to review those. Any changes, omissions, additions? If none, I will accept the motion on the minutes.
I move that we approve the minutes from the March 11th, 2025 Planning Commission meeting as published.
I will second that motion as well. We have a motion by Commissioner Hollis, a second by Commissioner Gage. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes 6 in favor. Now we'll take us to item number D, our staff business. I will look to my left. The audience is right first. Mr. Schindler, I'll start with you. Okay. Mr. Simonson, I'm sure we'll have a few questions for you later, so we'll hear your voice. I'll turn to my right. Audience is left. You guys just want to get going with the agenda, don't you? All right. Take us from items from the comments from the planning commissioners. Mr. Ryder, I will not be our next meeting. Meeting of April 8th, due to being Salt Lake Bees opening night at our new South Jordan ballpark. So that will everybody else be in attendance on the 8th?
Yes.
I will not.
Okay. Bishop Bishop will not be.
I'll be here.
Bishop Bevins will be. So we will have four in, so we will have a quorum. Any other comments from members of the commission that you guys like to bring up at this point this evening? Okay, let's jump ahead. Item number F, summary action. We generally do not have any, so we will jump to our action items. Number G, again, we typically don't have any unless it's an item held over from a previous meeting. So we will get right into it. Section H, our administrative public hearings for those in attendance. These are items which the Planning Commission is the final, authority for these items this evening. So quasi-judicial items that we are have to go off. We have the code and the items that we have to go off of, just for our people in the audience, just how we do the procedure. We will receive a staff report. They will present that to us. We will have questions from the commission to the staff at that point. After that, we will open it up to the applicant to add anything that they would like to add. And then after the applicant, we will open it up to the general public. If you're a member of the general public and would like to give testimony, you have up to 3 minutes. Please, you'll approach the microphone here. You'll give us your name and your address for the public record. You have up to 3 minutes. The commission will not directly answer your questions. We will take down any of your comments, and we will address them in our discussion. Public comment, we will have our discussion leading to a possible motion. I'm sure there's a few more details, but we're going to jump right into item H1, the South Station Plat 3 Multifamily Number 7 Preliminary Subdivision Updated for a property located on the west side of Lake Run Road between Centerfield Drive and Split Rock Drive. LHM Real Estate is the applicant, and Mr. Schindler will be giving us the report today. Greg.
Okay, thank you. Yes, you've seen South Station Multifamily Number 7, the first version of it. I think it was back in November or December, one of those two meetings, I believe. I'm not positive with it, but since then, before they submitted a final plat, they realized that they were hoping to add two more lots to the subdivision. You can see where they're located there. Those two lots at the end of that little row there at one time were wider, and they were wide enough to actually put another townhome lot on each one. So that's what they've proposed. That's the only, so they're adding the two lots. Other than that, nothing else has changed on the subdivision plat. Staff is recommending approval. It does meet all the requirements. You know, it doesn't put it over a density or anything like that. It meets all the requirements the city has. And also with, it meets the guidelines that are set forth in the master development plan for Daybreak as well. And I don't know if anybody from Daybreak is going to be is online or not, but I know that they're fully immersed in trying to get the Ball Diamond the stadium ready for in 2 weeks. So that's probably why there's nobody here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schindler. Any comments, questions for staff at this point? Mr. Calvin.
So the were the lots renumbered as part
yes,
of this?
Yes, they are renumbered.
They are renumbered, okay. And mm-hmm. Is anyone existing in these lots?
No, I mean no, because they never recorded a final plat.
Because you never recorded. Okay, yeah. Perfect. So, all right, thank you. All right, that's my question.
Did they give a reason? We asked them. They often say just our product offering got put in, and we.
I'm pretty sure the reason was that they realized they could have two more lots that would fit, and so two more lots makes, you know, extra. Profit, I suppose. So,
but again, they have a set number that they're allowed to have across the entire development, so that's two fewer right. lots at some point in the future.
That's true. There'll be two fewer than they can use someplace else.
Okay.
Yep.
And this may be more of a question for the applicant, but I'm just curious about how these things are going to work. Usually, with a townhome, you face the street, and then your parking's in the back. And I just don't see with like 110, 111, for instance, that lane there.
They don't face the lane. The lanes are, that all their access to the for the garages all go off the lanes.
Yeah.
You see a little thin strip along there? That is a sidewalk that runs between the buildings, and their front doors will be toward that sidewalk in that open space.
Okay. So is that going to be a 4 foot?
There's a P lot there, so that's how they do that. They kind of open up, even though they don't actually open up right on the that P lot, the open space, but that the open space comes up and then it goes this direction, and then when it goes that direction, it gets narrowed down. But they're also set back a little bit from that sidewalk. That's probably maybe 10 feet from the sidewalk. They'll have. And then they go in, they'll have a little pathway to the townhome and then up and then into it. So the townhomes don't have much yard ever anyway, but they'll have the typical normal about 10 feet by how wide. I think those are like 14 feet wide. The townhome is only 14 feet wide, so they'll have like a 10 by 14 front yard.
So. Okay, thank you.
I saw it in your report, just want to make sure, and Commissioner Hall's kind of alluded to it, it does reduce their overall number of units they could build in the development by two, but the overall density, even with the increase, is still within the master development agreement for this.
Right. This is in the town center area, which has a density for per projects that are 50 units per acre. So.
Yeah, level one. Okay, thank you. All right. We will. I'm just gonna have IT if they could check online just to see if the applicant is online. We'll make sure we afford them that opportunity if they are on time online in our Zoom format. Greg, you recognize any names there?
No, I don't.
Okay. So we will skip the applicant at this point. At this point of the meeting, since we don't have the applicant, we will open it up to the general public. So any member of the general public here in the council chambers who would like to give. Testimony on this side, and we will forward you up to the 3 minutes to come to the microphone. Seeing none, we will close the public comment and turn it to the commission for discussion leading to a possible motion.
I don't have anything.
I don't either.
Okay. In case anybody needs it, I have it printed off.
thank you. I'd like to make a motion.
Please.
I move that the Planning Commission approve file PLPLA 2025-00001, South Station Plat 3 Multifamily Number 7 Preliminary Subdivision Updated, as presented this evening.
All right. before I second, I'm going to say, is there any discussion to the motion? That way we don't have to do a whole bunch of administrative cleanup. Okay, I will second the motion. We have a motion by Commissioner Hollis and a second by Commissioner Getch. Now, any possible last second discussion to the motion? We'll have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Getch?
Aye.
Commissioner Bishop?
Yes.
Commissioner Brevins?
Yes.
Commissioner Ketmel?
Yes.
And Commissioner Harding?
Yes.
Great. That item passes with a 6-0 vote. We wish Lori Miller luck and understand fully what they're engaged in with something for the next 2 weeks. So, but we wish them luck and seeing them in the future. So this takes us to item number H2, the Mosaic Conditional Use Permit and Preliminary Subdivision Plat for property located at 1122 South River Heights Drive. Jack Ballstedt of Garbat Homes is the applicant, and Mr. Drozdek will be giving us the item this evening. Demir, the time is yours.
Thank you. Okay, so this is the property. As you can see, it is vacant and unimproved. The property is located at 11210 South River Heights Drive. The current zoning on the property is BHMU, which stands for Bangor Highway Mixed Use Zone. The proposed use is listed as a conditional use permit in the zone. And here is the preliminary subdivision plat. So the subdivision plat is going to create 76 residential units, some common space, and private streets. That's the second page of the plat. And on the site plan, you can see there's one access off River Heights Drive, and there's going to be two access points to the south of the project. There's an existing fence along the north boundary. That fence is proposed to remain, and there's going to be a sun wall erected on Bangor Highway. Landscaping, there's one active recreation area at the south end, and then there's going to be some sod areas in front of the front door patios. Sod areas are not going to exceed 20% of the total landscape area in the project. This is an example of the sound wall to be erected on Bangor Highway. And for building elevations, you can see there are three stories. They're gonna have a mix of stucco, ephes, and masonry finish on the outside. With that, I'll turn it over to you, commissioners, for any questions or comments.
Great, thank you. I'll set to the right this time. Any questions on this item?
I do.
Commissioner Bevins.
So there's how many accesses off of River Heights?
One.
Okay. I think in there, I don't know, somewhere I saw that there were two off of River Heights, and then the other one's coming in from the parking lot.
Well, the one to the south is shared.
Okay, so it's shared with that
office building office to the building south. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then on some of the documents we received, there's staff comments about, I believe it was too much stucco on the buildings,
mm-hmm.
and that's not within the, I think it was 20%. Has that all been resolved?
That's been fixed, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and was that resolved before it went to the ARC, or has that come through after?
After.
After, after. Okay, and this doesn't need to go back through ARC?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay, turn to the left.
What are the heights on the buildings?
Not sure, but BHMU doesn't have a 35-foot cap.
I think I
can
40.
Check, but they're limited to four stories.
On this, it's showing 40 feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I have for now.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Yeah. Okay, we will maybe save some time. Thank you, Mayor. Okay. At this point, is the applicant, Mr. Ballstedt or Garbat Homes, present this evening? Okay, would you like to come forward to the microphone and share anything additional to the staff report?
I don't think so.
Okay. We will save you any time if anything comes up in public comment, if there's anything you'd like to address. So at this point, similar to the first item, we will open this portion of the meeting to public comment on this item. Again, please come to the microphone, give us your name and your address, and you have up to 3 minutes. Public comment is now open. Seeing none, we will close public comment and move on to the commission for discussion amongst this item.
I have a question regarding the example of the sound wall along Bangor. The example given doesn't seem tall enough for a three-story building.
It's a 12-foot wall.
It's 12-foot. So it won't be the double that you see on Bangor that's a little bit taller? Because that example doesn't seem to be 12 feet.
That's what it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be 12 feet. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Catmull, Ms. Hollis.
Does staff confirm that the density meets the agreement of 3 units per acre in phase 1 and 6 in phase 2?
It does, yes.
Okay. And with those less dense units located on the side adjacent to where other housing is?
Yes. Before this project came in, we had a different project that was approved by Planning Commission. It was similar to this. And at that time, we looked at the unit counts, and the Bangor Highway mixed-use area was still able to receive almost 150, almost 200 units. So this is well below what still can be put in.
So I know we saw this a while ago, but the only reason it's coming back is because they changed the color scheme, the architecture. Is that right, or is there anything else that's coming back for?
Should I come back?
No, you get an answer there.
Okay. There was a slight change, and also their conditional use permit is valid for 1 year.
Okay.
And that was granted almost a year ago in May of 2024, so they have to renew it anyhow before the plat is not recorded and they haven't started construction.
Okay. So we're restarting the year and the minor changes to the architecture.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Was any action ever taken on the concern the commission had regarding access to the park down the street or open areas for the residents?
No changes were made, no.
Okay.
No.
But we did learn that there is a crossing light.
Like a quarter mile south.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the access to that park is better than we thought it was.
And just to confirm, Demir, he said there's only less than 20% open or natural
sod in the landscape area.
And that per the, I guess, the city's water-wise goals. Or was in the development agreement?
Yes, it's per city ordinance. At the time when they submitted an application, they're vested into the old ordinance. With the new ordinance, they wouldn't be able to have any sod.
Okay.
Outside of the recreation areas.
And I'm just going to ask Jeremy, I want to make him feel involved this evening, just with the main primary access off River Heights and the shared access on the south. And also to the north, just make sure that's adequate. I'm sure fire and public safety have given their green light, but from a traffic concern, traffic flow, that those accesses are adequate enough for a property of this size.
Yes, yes, they have. They've looked at the street widths. They're aware of it, and yes, they're satisfied with the design.
Great.
Can we bring the site map back up?
Sorry, we are going to make you have to go up.
Sorry, maybe this is for the applicant. I'm just curious where. I know we've got two buildings that are twin homes. Which buildings on this map are those? Okay, so that's building 9 and 12. Is what that looks like?
Yes, it seems so. Okay. Yes.
Are these a for sale product or a rent?
For sale.
Do we have a estimated price point?
I do not.
Around 500.
Just.
Would you mind walking up and saying that so we can have it on record?
And just confirm your name for the record, just so we're following the proper procedures.
Sure. Jacob Ballstead, Garbett Homes, 273 North East Capitol Street, Salt Lake City, Utah. We're hoping the prices will be a little bit under five starting, but I bet the average price will be north of $500,000.
And can you remind us what the product is, how many bedrooms, bathrooms there are, and the range?
There are 3-story units, 2-car garage. They're all just under 1,800 square feet. about a third of them are two bedrooms, two thirds are three bedrooms, and they all have a flex space, like a little office space. Assuming that two bedrooms or two and a half bathrooms.
Anything else for the applicant while we have them up? Hey, thank you for being here this evening and answering those questions for us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. Any other discussion on this item? Concerns, questions, deliberation?
Did we do a public hearing?
Yes, we did. Okay. Yes. Thank you for keeping me on our toes. Make sure we're completely formal. And just for those who might be watching via Zoom, we don't allow public comment via the online portal. You must be present in the council chambers. That's just our commission rules. So, all right. I know we saw this last spring. I'll go first because I let you guys go first last items. It looks like nothing too drastically has changed. Obviously, the conditional use permit. So, if this we do make a motion to approve, strongly recommend they get this recorded in the next 12 months so they don't have to come back again. Because I'm sure there's some time and resources involved with that. But I know we shared our concerns we had last year on that. I think those probably still remain with livability, I think would be the word, maybe a little bit with families and walking, but the park was within a close proximity. So
I do have a question for staff, sorry. When this came last time, we had some concerns about the fact that this development agreement was originally signed back in 2006. We were kind of bound to the 2006 rules. Have we looked at anything within the city that maybe we can adjust some of the language in these agreements so that if nothing happens from 2006 to 2024, we're not bound to what the city was in 2006 and bring that into the future so they're subject to our city code now rather than then?
I don't know that maybe there's a way to put an expiration date on the agreements, but once they start development, they're vested into the agreement.
Which would make total sense, but where this sat empty for like 20, almost 20 years,
I don't think there was an expiration in the development agreement, so they would have to go through a whole new development agreement process. And I don't, you know, again, the development agreement is made by two parties, not only the city, but in this case, I think it was the Boyer Company. And so they would have to, both parties have to agree to open it back up again. A lot of times they're happy with what they got and they don't want to get something. So
is there anything we can, as a city, put in where, I fully understand that this is not their fault and they didn't like personally sit on this, but where somebody came in and did a development agreement and then obviously it was signed, all of that was done, so it's there, but then nothing happens for 20 years. Obviously our city code has drastically changed in those 20 years in the way we look at land development and the way we want our land use to work, that somehow if nothing happens, that when that comes back for development, that there's some way to pull some of that code into the now. Does that make any sense, or am I just rambling?
I think it would have to be a provision in the agreement from the get-go.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
Commissioner Bevins, are you asking, like, in the template that we start with?
Yeah.
For a development agreement going forward, can we put a provision in that template to
100%.
Say, once it's signed, you have X number of years to begin the development, in which case then the building permit and everything else, all that timeliness kicks in.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it needs to be like a year or 2 years, but like something that triggers something after 10 years, obviously, yeah. Our city's a vastly different place.
We could probably do that into new ones, but I don't know if this development agreement actually might say, because it's been in the past that if you don't start construction for the entire, any part of the project for 10 years, then the development agreement is null and void. But it's not. Once they started building in the district, and with this where this development agreement covers, there wasn't any limit to how long that development agreement could be in place. So that was something could be after 10 years or something that we could go back and look at that,
for future developments. That's
but
for sure.
This particular development agreement covers that entire Bangor mixed use area, right? Not just this parcel.
Right.
Okay. And that's where we kind of got into trouble on this parcel. Not that we're in trouble, but yeah. Where some of the
concerns we had.
Concerns and difficulty where? Came in for us. Okay.
Chair, that might, I wonder if that might be an action that we can take as a council as a separate item in a future meeting to make that a formal recommendation for staff to go look at as an item.
Or it, because the city council is the entrant into the development agreement as a recommendation to them to include that type of provision.
However, but maybe a formal action that we
yeah.
do motions and
yeah.
vote.
Yeah.
To show the interest or lack of interest in such a topic.
Yes.
I would love to hear Mr. Simonson's opinion yes. on this.
Mr. Simonson, do you have anything that you'd like to add on that about potential expiration clauses and development agreements in the future, mm-hmm. or is that something that might not be sustained by a judge?
I don't recall the exact wording, but our current template that we start from when we put one of these together does have an expiration on it. And again, I hate to comment too much on it because it's not in front of me and I don't remember exactly what it says. The other comment I would make on this one in particular is that I'm not seeing any expiration agreement and it runs with the land. And so there could have been all sorts of ordinances enacted since then, but the rights under the development agreement run with the land, and so therefore they're still valid. Mm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Senator.
Sorry, that kind of derailed us for a second.
Nope, it's all good. Okay, any other comments? We are considering two items this evening with this application, a conditional use permit because it's expired or close to expiring, if not already, and the preliminary subdivision plat. So any other concerns regarding either of those two?
I just wanted to confirm that the two file numbers correlate to what he just said, a conditional use permit and a site plan.
Conditional use permit and preliminary subdivision.
Okay.
So that's a preliminary plat, right? The second one?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Any other discussion? If not, open to a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Okay,
still gives me heartburn, but here we go. Based on our discussion this evening, I move that the Planning Commission approve file number PLCUP 2024-00194 and file PLPP 2024-00193.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Bevins. Any questions with the motion? If not, I will second the motion. Now, any discussion to the motion? Okay, a roll call vote, please, Ms. Valdez.
Commissioner Bevins.
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge.
Aye.
Commissioner Bishop.
Yes.
Commissioner Hollis.
Yes.
Commissioner Catwell.
Yes.
And Commissioner Harding.
Yes. Thank you. That motion passes 6 in favor. Mr. Ballstead, we wish you luck. Thank you for being here this evening, and good luck. Okay, that concludes our administrative public hearings this evening. Takes us to our section I, the legislative public hearings, which are a little bit different than the administrative. On legislative public items, we are a recommending body to the City Council. They are the final authoritative decision makers for these, so we will be making a recommendation this evening. However, just for the public, they do take our feedback seriously and lean on us for those recommendations. So that takes us to item number I1, the residential front yard fencing and park strip landscape code text amendments. The applicants are Thomas and Rebecca Wyant. Sorry if I mispronounced that. And Mr. Moss will be presenting us this item this evening. Joe, the time is yours.
Thank you, commissioners. Forward here to the presentation. So tonight's item covers two separate ordinance requests, one for residential fencing standards and one for park strip landscaping. I'll cover the fences first and then we'll hop into the landscaping afterward. So we all like a white picket fence. It's nice to have a, you know, a front yard fence is not necessarily a bad thing. Currently, we don't necessarily allow those on all streets, but we do recognize that there is the need to, you know, people could have a front yard fence that is a contributing element to the streetscape. At the same time, you know, we recognize that that has to be done within some care and parameters. This is an example not from South Jordan, and this is not what would be proposed under any of the ordinances today, but just an illustration as to the fact that front yard fences can be a helping or a hindering force in a streetscape. So that said, you know, we did also look at kind of where we stack up with some of our peer cities. We do allow front yard fences in Daybreak. That picture of the white picket fence is from Daybreak. We don't allow them on neighborhood streets outside of Daybreak. Currently, the only way you could have that is if your home was fronting to an arterial or a collector street. But surrounding cities all have provisions that allow those front yard fences. And just a kind of point of vocabulary, since the ordinances in front of you tonight do make a differentiation between open and closed style fencing, solid fencing, I just wanted to make sure that I had an example of kind of some of the materials and fence styles that we were talking about tonight. So one note here is currently wooden pickets or wood or vinyl post and rail are not necessarily permitted under the existing ordinance, but wood under Exhibit 1, which we'll dive into here in a minute. So currently, I guess we'll start with where our code currently stands. We have, again, location criteria that you can only have those on a collector or arterial street. We have a height maximum for your fence panel of 3 feet for those solid type fences or 4 feet for your open style fences. And then we don't necessarily speak to gates, so those would just fall to whatever the fence height panel is. We do allow for a post or pillar projection that goes a total of 4 inches above that fence height panel. And then we have specified certain allowed materials here. And then we also require masonry pillars to be spaced a minimum of 10 feet apart. So that's what this looks like kind of on the ground here. This was a scale diagram. The taller figure is 6 feet, so that's about my height. The smaller figure is 4.5 feet, and that's the average size of a 10-year-old. So since we're in neighborhood streets, I thought it'd be appropriate to kind of have children at mind while we're looking at this as well. We also have, well, the applicant has made a proposal here to modify that current ordinance with the following. So they would allow those front yard fences on night neighborhood side streets, and it specifies along a right-of-way line or along a sidewalk. It wouldn't change that fence height panel. That remains the same. It would allow for gates to be taller. So a solid gate could be up to 4 feet tall. A open style gate could be up to 6 feet tall. A post or pillar projection, that could go an additional 24 inches beyond the fence height panel. So if you had a 6 foot open style gate, the absolute maximum would be an 8 foot pillar. It does stick with the same materials. It doesn't make any changes to that. It does reduce the minimum pillar spacing from 10 feet to 8 feet. And that is because the standard fence height, your fence panel size is 8 feet, not 10. So that was kind of a logical ask there. So again, this is kind of what that looks like on the ground. So, you know, again, the fence height panels are not changing, but this has a gate here on the left-hand side of the illustration. So you can see what a gate would look like and what those maximum dimensions of the pillars would be under Exhibit A, which is what the applicant has proposed. So as an alternative to that, because there were some points that staff was a little uncomfortable with, but we also think that a lot of the things that the applicant was requesting were within reason. So we made a modified version that we're proposing as an alternative exhibit called Exhibit 1 that we're bringing forward to you to consider alongside this. So you can see that it does also allow those front yard fences. We make some additional clarifications in Exhibit 1 that would prohibit them between a sidewalk and a roadway, and kind of let you have a little bit more flexibility as to where in that front yard your fence could be. We again maintain the same fence height panels as current ordinance and the applicant's proposal. We have also changed how we're looking at gates. We are considering those to be projection, like a post or a pillar. So we would allow those to be the same height as a post or pillar. So 12 inches above the fence height panel, depending on whatever style or size it is that way. The other thing it does is it adds a few more materials. So again, those wooden pickets, the post and rail style fences as well. And we also keep those 8-foot minimum separations, but I did include an exemption for gate posts, and sometimes those can be a little closer than a, you know, standard fence panel. So again, this is kind of what that looks like in practice. So the fence panels have not changed again, and you can see that that gate panel is just a little bit taller, and that would be the kind of maximum height of those projections. So I made a little kind of graphic to go through some of these, how we stack them up. So again, the main differences here are going to be height. So currently, we have a 4'4" maximum on any fence where allowed currently, so only on those arterial or collector streets. And our proposal and well, the applicant's proposal in Exhibit A would allow those poster pillars to go a maximum of 8 feet with an open style fence. The alternative proposal in Exhibit 1 is a maximum of 5 feet for those posts and pillars. The projection height, again, varies. So 4 inches, 24 inches, 12 inches. And one of the interesting things about that projection height is that would include any finials or lighting fixtures or things that you might include in that overall fence height calculation. Our current code isn't necessarily clear that those would be included, but it is how staff has traditionally interpreted our ordinance. And so both the applicant's proposal and the Exhibit 1 have a clarification that would specifically say what is included in those height limits, and that includes the lighting fixtures and things. And again, we're not really changing fence height panels at all. The only things that change are kind of how we're treating gates. So currently, gates are treated just like fence panels. Exhibit A, under the applicant's proposal, would allow those gates to go 4 feet for solid, 6 feet for open style. And then when we get to Exhibit 1, the alternative proposal, we're still sticking to that 3-foot, 4-foot height maximum for the fence panel. And then we're allowing gates to be treated as a projection so they could extend an additional 12 inches above that fence panel height. And just one more time for comparison, this is kind of how each of those stack up at the same scale here. So, you know, we have some difference in heights from what's currently allowed, what would be proposed under the applicant's proposal, and then staff's recommended alternative in Exhibit 1. And really, you know, we agree on a lot of things with the applicant's proposal, you know, allowing front yard fences to an extent. I think for us, when it comes down to is the height of the proposed gates as well as the projections above that. We have differing opinions on what we feel is appropriate for a residential neighborhood street. Again, we want to make sure that we're keeping things in scale and neighborly, and, you know, we want to be more like that white picket fence, not like the sound wall in the front yard. And so while again, that's not necessarily what's being proposed by the applicant, those 6 and 8 foot heights are more what we would see in a screening wall or a privacy fence versus something in a front yard. And neighboring ordinances as well would not necessarily allow that to be as tall either. The 3 and 4 feet are pretty common heights for front yard fencing in ordinances that I evaluated around us. So we are recommending that you send a favorable recommendation to the City Council of this ordinance as shown in Exhibit 1, not as requested by the applicant in Exhibit A. And that will get us to our landscaping. So in our landscaping, we have a current ordinance.
Well, can we, before we jump into landscaping, ask a few questions on the fencing piece? So I'm going to jump first just real quick. I'm assuming we have it, but because we are moving from the collector and arterial allowance to more residential, fire response, emergency response, have they given any recommendation? Because there's more homes that'll be opened up to, and you'll have less direct access with a fence in the way.
Yes, I did send this to our fire department for their review, and they didn't flag any potential issue on their end, either with the revision in heights or the fence panel reductions from pillar to pillar. So from a public safety perspective, they didn't have any potential issues. There's also a clear vision area that's required in our fencing ordinance to make sure the intersections are clearly visible and, you know, fences are not blocking that view. And none of the amendments in front of you tonight would change those requirements either.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. So my third part, and I'll turn over to the other commissioners, is I'm assuming if someone is, this is just permitted, it would be a permitted use. It would not be like a conditional use or some other type of permit with the city. But at that point, who, has code enforcement been involved? Because obviously their casework may increase if some of these types of fencing are in not good appearance, I guess. Have they been notified of the potential?
Yes, we've been working with code as part of drafting up this ordinance and working with the Winans. This, we don't require residential fencing permits currently, and so really it's only when there's an issue, then code enforcement gets involved when something's outside of our typical ordinance, but that would continue to remain the same under all of the proposals in front of you.
Commissioner Hollis.
Sure. Row, rest of world, what is that?
Right of way.
Okay.
Sorry, yes, right of way.
Where is that? Will you define that for me?
Yeah, the right of way is typically going to be platted as a public access. So you have your street, but typically the right of way will extend a little bit further back from the right of way. So like where your road ends, your right of way might go further back into a lot to maybe include the sidewalk, for instance.
But not always. Is that why your exhibit one has the sidewalk?
Yes. So sometimes the sidewalk may be further back. There might be some kind of public access easement or something, but we just wanted to make it very clear in our ordinance that we wanted to have the sidewalk outside of any potential fence.
What is the definition of open? What percent visibility does that have to provide? You showed examples that had the white pickets quite far apart, and then you showed some where I would have said it was only 50%, like it was half picket, half open.
Yeah, you can slice that a million different ways. Our traditional interpretation has been about that 50% mark. So if you're more than 50%, that's when we typically consider it an open style fence.
Okay. Would this be here without residents of our city prompting this review? Is this something city staff has considered, has been requested before?
No, this is not something that I think we would have necessarily brought before you. I mean, we have some other priorities that we have in our hopper that we would like to get taken care of first. But at the same time, these applicants brought this to us and we said, hey, there's an opportunity for us to make our ordinances better in this process. And so we took the opportunity to draft up that alternative proposal that would hopefully accomplish making our ordinances better and more clear, as well as allowing the applicants to do the majority of what they would like to do.
And so why is this allowed in Daybreak? Was that a part of their master development agreement?
It is part of their development agreement. Their fences are reviewed by their design committees and approved that way.
Okay. And then just, can you confirm that the overall max height includes projections?
Yes, the overall max height does include those projections. So that's your total maximum possible height and generally would be in combination with an open style fence.
Okay. Does the clear vision area include driveways? Every example you showed, I didn't see a driveway in sight. So how does this relate to driveways?
Yes, I believe that.
The existing code does cover driveways. It's 10 feet on the driveways. And then on the streets, there's a 30-foot triangle there.
Meaning it has to be 10 feet away from, like it has to end 10 feet from the edge of the driveway?
Right, right. Okay. Or take a corner. It just has to be in each direction of the corner. It has to be 10 feet. So the fence kind of makes a triangle there.
So does this not allow for a driveway to be gated off? Do we have anything in our code that would prevent somebody from gating off their driveway with this, whether it's electronic or manual?
It doesn't have a, like, it does have a provision to allow gates. It doesn't specify whether those are pedestrian or automobile gates.
So if the fence has to turn 10 feet from that.
20 feet plus.
Potentially gate off their driveway.
The clear vision triangle only comes into place when it's a solid fence.
Okay.
Because if it's an open fence, like you talked about with the pickets and so forth, and they can see through it, then there's no clear vision issue because you can see through it. So
essentially somebody could gate off their driveway with a wrought iron gate that went open.
It sounds like, yes, okay. They could.
That was it.
Okay, and just to follow up on Commissioner Hall, she said the daybreak, obviously you went through the process of whether they allow the neighboring cities that you projected, is Exhibit A or Exhibit 1 more in line with our neighboring communities?
it varies. I would say Exhibit 1 is probably going to be more in line with existing communities. Sandy does allow similar projection heights. Most cities are going to, again, be really at that 3 or 4 foot level. A lot of them don't get into specifics about projections and things like that. And ours is most similar to Sandy's in that regard.
Okay.
Exhibit 1 anyway.
Great. Any other questions for staff at this point before we let them get the landscape on the fencing?
Okay, go ahead. So on 104th South, about 24th West, when they redid that road, there is a section of properties that has like a 6 or 8 foot, maybe a sound wall. Is that, that's allowed, is that?
So there is still a provision that allows for sound walls or privacy fences, especially when homes are fronting to arterial roadways and they're not, or when they're separated that way. So for instance, like what you see on 114th South, that is something that was accommodated because of the roadway expansion, and it's kind of a different than typical circumstance. But yeah, if you're, this wouldn't allow change where those screening and sound wall type fences would be allowed. Right. This is only changing what you can do in front yards.
Right, I just wondered if it changed I thought for some reason in the presentation I heard that those were capped at 4 feet, but that I must have misheard. Surrounding cities. How about daybreak and gates? Does their fence provision have any call-outs that are separate for gates in their development agreement and standards?
I think most of their fencing standards are not necessarily in the development agreement itself. They're going to be within their architectural rules and guidelines that are enforced through their HOA. Okay. I'm not sure exactly what their stance is on gates as a whole. I know their fencing standard is pretty low, but I don't know if Greg has any additional insight.
They can have, they'll have fencing around the front yards. Mm-hmm. They don't exceed usually, I haven't seen any over 4 feet, and most of them are actually 3 feet. Mm-hmm. And they have a gate because they do the whole front yard, so they'll gate it. And when it comes to daybreak, though, driveway gating, they don't have that at all because most of the driveways are in the back. There's no yard. They're accessed from the alley. So,
Commissioner Bishop, as a Davis resident, anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I've got a copy of the daybreak fencing guidelines here. But I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. So it doesn't call out gates. First off, is in terms of being any allowing any more or less, but the heights are limited to 3 feet, and they must be picket or open fences. So, yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, Commissioner Cottmull. Anything else? Commissioner Harding.
So in my neighborhood, I'm off of Whispering Sands Drive. We have a number of backyards that come into a street. So their 6 foot fence comes up to that sidewalk. Would we then expect them to allow for that 6 foot all the way through to the end of their house? And then because it's a white vinyl, it wouldn't be open, so they'd have to drop it? if they did their front? Is that, is just so I can picture this?
Yeah, so currently you're allowed to have a 6-foot privacy fence in your backyard. And so if you continue that along, when it becomes a side or a front fence, once you get to the other, you know, yards of the house, there are different requirements currently. And so it would need to come lower in the front yard. If it were a solid vinyl fence, it would need to be a maximum of 3 feet tall on that fence panel.
And in the current code, side fences are allowed. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, so if you have a front yard, so you're just kind of a middle lot in a regular residential street, you're allowed to have a fence between you and your neighbor next door that goes up to the sidewalk, and that's your side fence. You're just not allowed to have that fence that goes across the front yard along the sidewalk.
Along the sidewalk. And the current limitations is that 4 feet, 4 inches.
That's correct.
Along the sides, okay.
What if you're a corner lot? What does that look like?
Corner lot is gonna be treated as, well, depending on your, generally there's gonna be two different setbacks for corner lots. We would treat those both as front, usually. Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but we would usually allow that.
Currently, if you live on a corner lot and you have your rear yard fence that's 6 feet tall and goes out to the street, the side street, you can run down that side of the street all the way to the front line of the house at 6 feet, and then it has to drop down to the 3 feet as it comes down any further on that and around the front. So anything that's adjacent to the front yard can't exceed the 4 feet in height if it's open, or 3 feet if it's solid.
Commissioner Hardy.
And so how will that work on busy corners where there's an intersection, not just a stop sign, but even a stop sign, if we allow that tall of a fence when they can't see through it?
Yes, so the current rules would require that visibility triangle if there were some kind of intersection. So they have to have kind of a, if you imagine you go to the corner of an intersection, they have to have 30 feet on this side and 30 feet on this side, and then they make kind of a triangle, and that area needs to remain clear for visibility. And so that would apply to really, you know, especially solid fences and things, but, you know, those privacy fences or anything would need to comply with those clear vision areas.
And are chain link fences in this?
No, chain link fences are not currently permitted in side yards, front yards, on arterials or collectors, and they would not be permitted under any of these proposed text amendments.
Okay.
Commissioner Evans, anything else? And Commissioner
Bishop?
I got one more.
Could someone have, what we won't call it a fence, we call it a living hedge, in front of their yard today, and are there any height restrictions?
Yes, so hedges are I believe hedges are treated similar to fences in that height material. So, and they are also subject to clear vision areas.
Right, so CVA, okay.
But currently allowed?
Currently allowed
all the way up to the sidewalk? In the front yard?
Yeah, inside the, like a side fence type thing. Or on a collector or arterial.
But is a hedge allowed in a front yard up against the sidewalk?
Yes.
Okay. And is there a height restriction on that?
3 feet.
Okay, 3 feet.
3 feet hedge on the front.
Because it's solid, so you can't see through it, so 3 feet.
Okay, so it's treated like, okay, that's what you were talking about, being treated like a fence.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I think that's a nice segue to the next part on landscaping.
Indeed.
See, that's how we're moving along.
All right. So we have a current ordinance, the landscape ordinance that we adopted in 2010, that allows for landscapes that are, you know, conserve water. And it also requires that there is a living plant coverage requirement for landscaping, because we don't want to necessarily get away from all living plant material, but there was definitely a desire to make it so that we could have water-wise landscapes in the city. So currently, we have a live plant coverage requirement for front yards and park strips, and for a 50% live plant coverage. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean you have to have grass. In fact, in some commercial applications, like we were just discussing in the previous item, there's a limitation on how much grass commercial applications can have. Residential is treated a little bit differently, but it still has that minimum 50% living plant coverage requirement. And that is extended both the yard and the park strip. The applicant is requesting to modify that living plant coverage requirement specifically in the park strip to reduce that from 50% to 25%. Currently, we also have language in our ordinance that measures that ground plant coverage at the, it measures live plant coverage at the ground plane. So if you have a street tree, for instance, you're not allowed to count that canopy as part of your live plant coverage because it's not covering the ground. The applicant is requesting that we modify that to allow those tree canopies to be counted in the overall plant coverage. And so that's the high and lows. There's really those two key points. However, it is of note that we do require street trees for residential properties every 50 feet. So if you have a tree in that park strip that also gets to count for that live plant coverage, the overall effect would be a reduction of plant coverage on the ground that would be greater than 25% from the current requirement. And just for some illustrations as to kind of what that looks like, this top one is just more wild vegetation with plant coverage, showing what the different coverages percentages look like. And then the bottom one is a more kind of landscaped version, kind of what you would see. So like I said, we're currently at 50%. The applicant's requesting to reduce that to 25%. However, that would also allow those tree canopies to be counted in that measurement. So the actual ground level vegetation might be further reduced and still be able to meet the ordinance as proposed. So for that reason, you know, it's overall reduction in our current standards for park strip landscaping. And the development standards remove that specification as to where that live plant coverage is measured, which can lead to some potential administrative difficulties. So for those reasons, staff is recommending denial of this particular amendment. And I'm here for any questions.
Any questions for staff on the landscape, Ms. Harding?
So in our current code, is it at planted or is it at maturity? That's that ground plane.
It's at maturity.
At maturity. So it's whatever the little tag tells us it will grow to, regardless, it takes 3 years, right? That's mm-hmm. what it is. Okay.
We have the 50% in the park strip and the 50% plant coverage in the front yard. Is that park strip calculation included in the front yard calculation, or are they completely separate?
Currently, it's the same percentage in the park strip and the front yard. So staff would just treat it all as one and make sure it's balancing out to that 50%. Mm-hmm. But there's not a differentiation in the code. I mean, it says specifically front yards and park strip should be 50% minimum. So, you know, we do look for that, but it's not going to be it would be a different calculation you'd have to make sure you ran if the park strip and the front yard are treated differently percentage-wise.
Okay. So currently somebody could have under 50% behind the sidewalk but have 100% in their park strip, and that would kind of average it out?
Yes, I believe so. The way it's worded, it typically will...
This will upset that, right?
Yeah.
And vice versa. Is that why so many of my neighbors have been able to flip their strips and have 100% rocks? Because the rest of their front yard remains vegetated?
Yes. Well, there's also some other things with the park strips. So the state did change some requirements. So a lot of ordinances used to require like grass in park strips, which is obviously not a very water-wise thing. So if there's anything that's less than 8 feet in width, there's now a state rule that prohibits requiring grass specifically in those areas. And so this ordinance update that we did in 2010 was ahead of that and would allow for modifications that would be more water wise. But yeah, the overall effect would be we'd want to have it at.
We had an ordinance change even more recent than that that was brought about by South Valley Sewer. Yeah. I thought that they were always considered separately, that when you were, let's say, taking the grass out of your park strip, that you still had to maintain 50% vegetation in that park strip. But it sounds like it's an overall calculation, including front yard.
That's a little confusing.
Actually, the way we've been doing it is you have to have 50% in the park strip and 50% okay. of it in there. They don't right. get, they don't, you can't put the 100% in one and not have the other. Okay. We do have, and you're not the only neighborhood that probably has just rocks. It seems like, you know.
I was going to save this for later. For the record, I struggle with a city that does not enforce an ordinance, especially when they provide incentives to people to flip their strips. They deliver the rocks and then do no follow-up to ensure that they are in compliance.
Well, actually, the city, the part of the city that did that was doing that mostly. They did not. They were letting people get away with it because they didn't know. It was in, it's the city's fault in a lot of that. Already, because Public Works, we finally had to say, why are we seeing all this? You're not requiring the plants. You're not giving me. And they said, we don't. That's not something that we thought that was required. So,
do they know now?
Oh yeah, they do know. They do. This
for that really hurts me deep down. So. But at the same time, I can see why they're confused when park strips that the city's been responsible for don't comply with the ordinance. All right, I've said my piece. I'm sorry.
No, you're all good. Okay, anything else?
That's true, too. There are park strips that the city has paved over. And
they're all right by me, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, there's somebody.
Oh, no, they might be, but there are some. Planning has often has had words with the different departments that cause that. So
you just need to have an old enough home that you don't have a sidewalk or park strip. All right, anything else for staff on the landscape?
This basically just makes city staff's job harder.
We only have one code enforcement officer in Dan, and she's probably, we'd have to hire several more, I guess, to go, because there's a lot of non-compliance when it comes to landscaping. So.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of micromanagement that we don't want to be doing as a city.
Is it your recommendation to deny both requests, or is it just on the landscaping piece?
No, it's just the ordinance 2025-08 for the landscaping specific component that we are not in favor of approval. We're recommending denial.
And just to be sure, the reason we have both together because there's a single applicant.
Correct.
And so we have to assist them with this process. So when we get, after public comment, the applicant we'll make a singular motion, or I would actually recommend we make two separate motions, one for the fencing piece and one for the landscape piece, and that way we can just be clear if we, whatever recommendations we make. Okay, sure. Anything else for staff at this point before we get to the applicant and public comment portion of the meeting?
I have one more question, okay. Sorry. So the applicant is residents. The city staff has a separate, on the first piece of it, I should have asked this before, has an alternate recommendation that we're just, if we were to go that route, we would just sub the city's recommendation instead of this one, but we don't need to do any other.
Or do we need to, because the formal application from the applicant, I guess it might be from Mr. Simonson, would we need to formally deny what they applied for, but then adopt the city's substitute in its place?
That's what I was trying to get at.
Well, first of all,
we don't deny,
I know that you know this, but you will not deny anything.
Yeah,
you may give a negative recommendation to one and a positive recommendation on another, or you could make a negative recommendation on both and just say we recommend it be left as it is. I would recommend when it comes to the motions that that you do it by ordinance number. It's the landscape ordinance is 2025-08, and the fence ordinance is 2025-05.
Yes, and I guess to that effect, in your motion, you can just include whatever exhibit your preferences to give the recommendation for, whether that's Exhibit A as shown by the applicant or Exhibit 1 as recommended by staff.
Okay. Yeah, we're a little ahead of our probably the game, but at least we can start thinking about it.
Yeah, that makes way more sense in my head.
All right, I'm going to invite the applicant to come forward. I'm Mr. and Mrs. Wyatt, if you'd like to come to the microphone, just so we're legal, give us your name and address for the record, even though we have, you know, just follow the process, and you can add anything that you need to the staff report, and the time is now yours.
Hi. Completely off topic, but we are go bees. So excited for that. Seriously. All right, so I think Joe and I have been working back and forth for a while on this, and Joe, can you pull back up your slide that had the differences on the fencing? So I think what we should just address is the differences in that we have and why. I think that would make it a lot easier.
On the fencing or the plants?
No, that's Park Strip, and I'll ask you to pull that one up. I'm talking about the fence. Do you want to do the fencing first?
Yes.
Okay. So he was recommending the 6 foot, and we said the recommendation of the 8 foot. In our particular case, ours is wrought iron. The pillar, sorry, I'm a little nervous, and the pillar itself has to be, it has to be strong enough to hold the weight of the actual gate. In our particular case, that is why we asked, we have a 6 foot, 6 foot pillar with a cap on it. And then on that particular pillar, we have a light fixture. Now in our particular case, our house is very large. And to have a gate and then have a little tiny 12-inch light fixture on top, it really looked kind of scattywampus and not in, it really didn't flow. So in looking at ours and in looking at what is already in the subdivision and in our subdivision, I am at 11201 South Alyssa Meadows Drive. I am a corner lot, so I'm going to be able to answer a lot of your different things about the triangle of safety and all of those things. We have been working on this for close to 5 years now with the city. So here's kind of what we are thinking. The reason that we ask for the additional height is one for the size of our home versus the size of the fence and the gate, and so that everything looks uniform and we don't have these tiny little things now that are really not pillars architecturally correct. And it also, it will, by adopting this, bring in the other homes that have been built and have not been flagged by the city. It will bring them into compliance also, because there are, and I've said this before when I was talking with Greg and when we've been doing this in over this 5 years, there are no less than 4 dozen homes within a 2-mile radius of my house that has front fencing, has gates, has all of these things that we had requested. We are the first ones in front of you guys trying to get the law changed and trying to be able to do this in order to stay within the law up until this point, until code came. When we started construction on this, we actually thought it was allowed. And so this process has been going on for quite some time. That's why we're asking for the additional over the 6 feet, mm-hmm. is simply for the lighting fixtures in order so that they don't look like they're too small for the actual architectural element that we're trying to add. Outside of that, I think that was the only thing that we didn't agree on straight out As far as the fencing and the pillars and the gates and everything like that, we had pretty much come to an agreement over that. So it was just simply in an effort to have it look architecturally correct for our particular home and for the other homes in our neighborhood that already have these things, and it all to be in compliance. So that is why we asked for the additional height recommendation. And if anyone wants to do it in the future in those large homes, so that they don't have it either.
I'm Thomas Wyatt. It's surprising when you get up to the gate or the pillar how large the light turns out to be. That when you stood back, it didn't look like it was 12 inches or 18 inches, the light fixture. And it is quite large. When you are away from the fence, it looks proportional, it looks small, but when you get up, it turns out to be a large light fixture, and it did add some height that we didn't put it there to add the height. It just is the proportional size fixture for that pillar and for that house and for the architecture. It wasn't that we didn't add it there to get height, to gain height. It was just the appropriate. The architect and the designer said this is a fixture that matches that configuration. And to go to a smaller fixture, it just looks absolutely incorrect.
And on top of that, we're trying to match the size that we have on our garages, on the back of our house, on any light fixtures that we have all over the house. We were trying to match those. So the height recommendation actually matches the ones that are already on our garage and that are already on the front of our house, but they're attached to the house, and that kind of makes a little bit of a difference. They don't seem proportionally large. So that was our differences. That was why we were requesting this, and that was the only kind of sticking point that we all came to. And so I don't know if you want to go. Do you have any questions for me? Sorry.
Do you have any pictures of yours?
I honestly thought, because yes, I. Yeah.
Maybe there's the camera. I think that she's.
Yeah,
done.
Let me bring you up a picture of what. I've been in front of you guys before for different reasons, and I brought all this stuff. And for some reason, I honestly thought it was just going to. I thought we were going to have it.
Can I ask you a question to start?
Sure. While I'm looking, absolutely.
So just a clarification, would this be across all zones of the city then, this Exhibit A or Exhibit 1, or is it only certain?
Yeah, we'll address that, not with the applicant, okay. So we'll save that for our discussion.
Okay.
Yeah. Trust me, I already have that one. Same question written down.
Okay.
I am almost there. I had an architectural rendering made of what our particular home will look like once it's up. And
I believe four of us on the commission were present when you were here last. So
yeah.
I think we remember. But the two newer members, that's why you're on the ends.
Oh, my gosh. Hold
on. A question for Ms. Valdez. When this picture comes up, do we need to do anything special to get it?
No, it'll be part of the recording.
It'll be, okay.
Or would you need to have that emailed in?
Yeah, she'll need to have that
emailed. Yeah, so whatever you will project to as you hold underneath the camera above you. But we will need to have that emailed to the city. You can provide that to Mr. Moss or since you've been working with him.
I think he has it, but I'm not sure. But that's absolutely something we can do. That is not an issue whatsoever. And my apologies. I reset my phone on accident when we were talking.
And it might not hold up ours because we're not the final deciding body. And obviously, you want to have that ready for city council. So, I mean, on that. So, if you can't find that, that's fine. Just have that ready for city council. They'll probably ask as well.
Okay, well, then let's go ahead and talk about the park strips while I'm still looking, because I can pretty much talk about this in my sleep.
So if you can just the landscape comparison slides of with the 0%, 10%, 25%, I think.
Well, before we do that, too, mm-hmm. Can you characterize, I'm just driving around in Google Maps, just in your area. Usually I try to go there in person, but I didn't make it today. I'm not seeing a lot of fences along.
On my particular street, right around the corner from my street, there are three homes that have the brick fencing, and they do have actual gates that go all the way across their driveways. And I do...
Is this like on Park Palisade?
No, it's around the corner. If you go to the end of Alyssa Meadow Drive, or I guess it would be the beginning of the end of my street,
the end of your
going street. Towards, going south, and then you turn right. If you go down that street, there's a home there.
Okay.
If you continue, and it's got like a pinkish red brick and very white Victorian looking wrought iron, and it goes across their driveway. That's one. And then if you continue around and
okay, I didn't find it, and that's okay. I'm more interested in like of 50 of your closest neighbors, what?
Oh, no, I'm within a 2 mile radius of my home. Oh,
okay.
Over this 5 year or that we've been doing this, I have found that many homes with front yard fencing. Now, some of them work into this. They are not on feeder streets. They are not on, and that was more of my argument when we were talking about this in the beginning and when we sat down with the mayor and the city manager. Basically, the agreement was that by doing this, we would bring all of those homes in that particular area into compliance mm-hmm. instead of having to have them go through all of that stuff by doing that. And on these particular homes, yes, they have the larger light fixtures. They have the bigger things that go over and above. So I don't know if we would need to get additional permits or what the case would be in that particular situation.
Yeah, we'll have that discussion, and of course council will have a discussion.
And that's okay, yeah.
If you want to move to the landscaping portion, sorry to...
No, that's fine.
Meeting moving along.
That's fine. If you would go to the 25%, the 50%, and the stuff like that. So the biggest reason that I was asking for the 25% is because trees are not included or counted as landscaping when you stand in front of, when you're in a park strip. In our particular case, and in the case of several people, we actually use like the arborvites and the Italian cypress trees, the different things like that that you see frequently in Utah, those big green arborvites. So they're considered a tree and not a shrub, and yet they go 3 feet wide it as they grow up. And mine in the back that are mature are over 3 feet wide. Their circumference is actually closer to 10 feet. All the way around. And so by including the trees in the canopy or the spruce, the arborvites or the cypresses, when you get to the mature size, you end up with a 50% coverage anyway. So the change, the end result is the same. The change sounds drastic. But when you go with that, you end up with the same amount of coverage if you include trees as being landscaping shrubs. Mm-hmm. And in our design, we have Italian cypresses in the front yard that will go in the park strips versus trees with big canopies. But that's why we talked about trees with canopies and counting the canopy, because you end up with a smaller amount in percentage-wise, but when you include the trees and you include their full size, you still end up with 50%. So that was my, for lack of better words, argument over the 50% to the 25%. So if you've got a juniper, if you've got a large... I don't even know what they call those boxwoods, but they're called mondos, and they grow to 6 feet tall. They go very, very wide. So if you put a boxwood like that in there, or if you put an arborvitae in there like that, or anything that would grow to that size, you're going to get that 50% coverage without having all the additional little things.
Any questions for the applicant at this point on the landscaping piece? Okay, no, thank you. We'll may call you back up if we have questions about our discussion.
Sure.
And at this point, before we decide, I'm going to open up this portion of the meeting to the general public. So if there's anyone who is in the chambers who would like to give testimony on this item, that staff, you guys are more than welcome to as well. You guys are citizens. So the time is now yours to give comment on this item for the general public. Seeing none, I will close the public comment section of this portion and move along to the commission to discuss, leading to some recommendations to the council.
May I recommend that we do it in pieces?
Yes, so let's focus on, I think, the fence requirement first, because that was presented to us first. And so let's do the fencing piece and maybe even make the motion after the fencing and then we'll jump to landscape. Or do you guys want to do both motions at the end?
I think we do one at a time.
Yeah, do one at a time. So we'll focus on, sorry, I got my readers on here. Ordinance number 2025-05, which is the front yard fencing text amendment first for our discussion. So we have the current ordinance, we have a application from the resident, and then we have the, I guess I'll call it the substitute from staff recommendation. And again, we're making a either positive recommendation on one or negative on them to the city council. So I'll just go first. My concern is, while this application is from one resident, any change would apply to the entire city minus Daybreak.
Awesome.
And everybody else who is currently within the 2 mile radius, which is basically the entire eastern side of South Jordan within a 2 mile radius of this property, including myself, who currently have fences in violation of the city code. They're in violation of city code. So I don't necessarily agree making a overarching change to a large height, because anybody could then apply up until that. I don't like the applicant's recommendation of the height, that because it's just too tall and anybody else could then just come in and there's no city control on that. So I would prefer the lower height. I do see that there's some need to have a front yard fencing on that for these properties, but I don't like the higher. The original option, is it option one or option, sorry?
Option A is the applicant's exhibit. Exhibit A is theirs.
Exhibit one I would be more favor of. So whoever wants to go next.
Does Daybreak, Joe, allow solid front yard fences? Or is it all open?
They don't allow solid fences.
Okay. As I've been thinking about this, the biggest concern I have is safety. I've had neighbors have a hedge, which is allowed, between two driveways, and had so many near misses that they couldn't live with it anymore. They took it out just simply for safety. That's my biggest concern here. And I would actually be in favor of suggesting that Exhibit 1 be modified for only allowing open fencing with all of the height restrictions that you've set forth. That's where I think I am.
Mr. Catmull, I'll just go down the line.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't quite ready for a summary, but we'll just kick it in.
We'll skip it. Ms. Harding, would you like to jump in? Mr. Catmull, he likes to collect his thoughts.
Oh, I don't like him. Sorry.
I completely understand the aesthetics. I understand the height needed. I understand wanting to match lights and making it all look nice. And in some areas, I could also see where the height of an open fence would really add value to certain areas because it's so common as you drive through South Jordan. I wonder if there could be also a recommendation to what the city is projecting, especially on our heavier gates, that might allow for higher pillars to support those gates. I don't know if that's even possible.
Okay. Whatever.
You're good?
Okay, I think that's good enough.
Mr. Kevin.
Like several have commented, like I try and balance this with the lot owner's ability and rights to set up an environment to make an appealing and an attractive property in South Jordan, and also what that is and what that could do to neighborhood and overall characteristics. I am currently, like, I too have concerns about trying to over optimize an ordinance that applies, or to apply an ordinance that affects very few properties broadly, and what that could change. So I would be more in favor of starting with something like we see in Daybreak, and then that would bring all of South Jordan together in a closer proximity. And then I don't know if we want to deal with, there might be other ways to deal with things that aren't currently in compliance. Let's see, I can't remember, there are terms that I know that city staff knows that allowed but not,
what is the term?
Not compliant. Basically, existing non-conforming.
Non-conforming. That's it. Thank you.
But also, I can see where you're saying, like, maybe have like a, I don't want to call it conditional use permit process for exceptions to maybe what we would recommend. But.
Or if it's not already, if the any actions are cleared on that, then it's allowed to be as it is, and then going forward. Mm-hmm. You do something like that. And the only other thing I would say is we didn't really talk about it, but this, I might recommend that we consider different standards for different zones, because you know, an R6 versus A1 could need completely different things if that's what we want to do.
Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of allowing fences in front yards, and I'll tell you why. In my experience, I don't like walking through neighborhoods when there are fences in front of the houses, because, well, first off, I think it gives off kind of a sense of, like, you're not welcome here, like, this is my, you know, my domain. And but also a much bigger deal for me is dogs. With a fence in the front yard, people let their dogs run in the front, and as you're walking down the street, you're getting barked at, and the dogs are barking at each other, and that sort of thing. Even with the open fences that are in Daybreak, we always watch, because dogs will wait until you go by and then start barking at you and scare you to death. But having said that, I do wonder the same thing as Commissioner Catmull. If my perspective is more of like a denser type of neighborhood, and I think that perhaps what's being asked for may make sense in like lower density parts of the city. I do also like the idea of perhaps just limiting it to open fences. I will say that in Daybreak, with that 3-foot limit and dogs, you sort of have to trust your dog to not just hop the fence. And so I don't know if I would actually recommend limiting it to 3 feet if we did allow fences, but yeah, I think that's covered everything.
Y'all are really good at saying all the things that I'm already thinking.
You'll go first on the landscaping. How about that?
No, I'm good. but I fully understand where this applicant is coming from. You know, we've seen this particular lot before. But as I look at the difference in height, I can see why it would be requested. But as I think about 8 feet, that's taller than most of your fences are going to be in that entire neighborhood. So it just kind of seems out of place there. And while I completely understand that maybe we need to look at regulations according to zone and get a little more particular, like they stated at first, like if this wasn't coming from a resident, we wouldn't be looking at this right now. The city has other priorities. So I think in Exhibit 1 is kind of a good stepping stone of this has come to our attention, we're willing to do something about it, and if it becomes a priority or an issue down the road that the city feels is more important, then we can go into more detail and get down into the nitty-gritty of zoning and all of the different things that come with that. But I think Exhibit 1 gets right down to where we need to be. It's kind of that first, we're willing to look at it, we're willing to make some changes, let's kind of compromise on this.
Baby steps.
And take care of it. Yeah, it's a baby step. It's the first stepping stone.
Just two more things we haven't talked about that I, sorry, I forgot. At first, I can envision what you're talking about with the lamps on top of the posts. And I think, it's okay.
No, not at this point. We're
yeah, it's okay.
We're in our discussion.
But I can see that, and I can see where that would be an important thing. And then I remember that we're trying to create kind of this dark sky mentality, and so there is an aspect of that from a city perspective, trying to reduce lighting, as attractive as that may be. And I can also see why 4-inch and all that. So I can see that perspective. And then the other thing that I'm not a big fan of is I don't think I'd be a big fan of a fence across the driveway.
Sir, we need to ask you to sit down. We're in our discussion, so unfortunately you're out of order. We thank you for coming up, but we maintain our process.
I'm not a big fan of like a fence across the driveway.
Okay.
For South Jordan.
Thank you.
Sorry, for South Jordan.
All right, good discussion. Sorry to keep us moving along, but we have a second portion of this as well. Any additional comments that might sway how we make a recommendation to the City Council? Obviously, the staff have given us our different recommendations, so we can forward negative recommendations on both Exhibit 1 and Exhibit A. We could forward a positive on either of them as well. So, and we could also make recommendations to the City Council for either of those that have been brought up with only open fencing or by zone or whatever that might be, as we've all discussed. So those are our options for right now on this. And so... anybody willing to take a stab of how they feel the commission will recommend? There's no wrong answer.
We should just have a quick discussion.
Okay, so let's just go through them all. So on the applicants, Exhibit A, I don't want to do a straw poll, but, we'd be wasting our time if we went forward to just forward a positive or negative recommendation on that. And that's where, the taller fence heights, the type of materials we've seen, they would be applied to all portions of the city minus Daybreak.
I'm more inclined to just recommend a positive on
Exhibit 1. Just the city substitute? Staff recommendation.
So I'm not hearing you too well.
Oh, that's because my mic's not on. Sorry. No, I was saying I'm more inclined to just go forward with recommendation to the City Council to approve the city staff. Exhibit 1.
Would you like to have any additional recommendations?
And I'm happy to make that motion if we're all in agreement that that's appropriate.
So how close is Exhibit 1 to where Daybreak is? What's the differences of where Daybreak is? Because I really like that way of thinking. If this is going to be citywide, right? How close is your recommendations to a majority of Daybreak?
Yeah, so Daybreak regulates their own fencing a little bit differently through their HOA. And I think as Commissioner Bishop brought in their design guide, they typically limit their fence heights to pretty low, which should, I believe, 3 feet, and open style.
Yeah, I don't want to look. Like, the thing is, in our city code, fences are already allowed. It's already defined. Uh-huh. You can have the 50% see-through. You can have the solid. I don't really want to deviate from what's already there.
Down the road, if this were to be adopted by City Council, yeah, and they feel it's an issue, then they could make modifications to only allow a certain style.
Do we allow for variances normally, or is it
so
very
if this,
rare?
If the council were to adopt the code, could a variance be made or some other type of permit process for exceptions to the code?
I recall from last time that it's very difficult. Mr. Simonson went through all the legal for like the 5 things you had to meet. And even though this was an interesting case that I had a lot of compassion for, he said the answer was still no. I didn't meet all those legal requirements for a variance.
Variances are tough. So It is not something that the council, then the council wouldn't be the one that would allow it. We have a hearing officer that allows that, and he follows the state law to the letter. And there's, like you said, there are five criteria to have to be met prior to approval of a variance of any type. So,
but essentially anyone could come in and apply for a variance, right?
Anybody can apply, but they, and we also don't have anything in our ordinances that would allow usually the planning commission or the city council to have it to approve an exception to the code either. So,
yeah. So,
and then do any of the other surrounding cities that you reflected in your presentation allow for by zone frontal fence zoning, or is it blanket?
So it really does vary a little bit municipality to municipality how they handle it. The majority of them have a single residential fencing standard that's applicable citywide.
Because if we were to make any recommendations, that's one of the things I would recommend, is that in the lower density housing areas where it's more congruent with the house style, that, and I don't know what those zones are, that we recommend that be evaluated. That would be something that I'd recommend.
Maybe if we don't even include it in our motion, I know city council is hearing this discussion and we'll consider, you know, maybe applying it to, you know, other allowances not via zone on that. Or you know, obviously we've shared about the fencing style as well in Heights. And so obviously based off the recommendation off of, if it is exhibit one, they've heard our discussion and we'll make, you know, the decision based on that. And obviously, you know, but I don't know if we need to formalize that in the motion, the recommendation, because they'll take our action. And definitely reach out to each of our council representative and let them know of our concern. We'd like to see it via zone. That might be a little bit more productive way to get away. I try to find the right way to say that. So, Commissioner Bevins, I'm going to see.
I'm going to just say one thing, okay, just so that you're aware. As is with Exhibit 1, I will vote against it if it includes the closed fencing. And that's fine. We can proceed, absolutely. But I do feel like that's a significant enough change that I'm not on board.
Okay. Am I seeing a nod from?
I feel the same way.
And okay, so do we want to, does somebody else want to take a stab at it and put that in their motion? Because I don't care either way. We already have it. There's several in
there. I would make it per the verbiage that's been provided, and then we can vote accordingly.
Okay. So it will fail at this point.
We'll be a negative.
No, be a negative.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for correcting my verbiage.
And actually, we don't have to make a second motion because we just have our recommendation on what we've been presented.
Okay. And they'll listen to this and know why. Okay. So I, based on our discussion this evening and the evidence presented, I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council that they approve Ordinance Number 2025-05, Residential Zones Front Yard Fencing Text Amendment, as shown in Exhibit 1.
Motion by Commissioner Bevins. Any questions with the motion? I will second that. Now, any discussion to the motion? For those who may be voting against, at this point, formally declared maybe the reason why voting it. But it is a legislative item, so you don't have to. But if you would like to, on the record.
I'm okay with moving forward with evaluating front yard fencing. However, I would like it to remain open, just because I think the reason we haven't allowed fencing in front yards to this point is to allow for visibility for safety issues, as well as that open feeling, walkability, openness for a neighborhood. So I'm not opposed to it, but I do think that that the closed fencing should be removed from that list of allowable front yard fencing.
Okay. And anybody else might be voting against, you don't have to state your reason why, but you are welcome to for the record.
Ditto. And the only thing I would add to that is, like, I feel like it's a great starting place, and because it is across the whole city, that later on, we want to add that, and it makes sense to, we could, but I favor a smaller change citywide.
Are you saying by zone or?
Well, for now, this does not separate zones, and so I would prefer a smaller change, and I want to be more consistent with Daybreak so that it feels more like that. And then if the city wants to find other ways, oh, the other thing I would say is, like, it could be that as part of this action, that we've given engineers, city engineers, and city staff some latitude to make minor adjustments and minor tweaks for special circumstances. And so I would not be opposed to for the city council to empower city staff to have some margin of alteration to accommodate unique circumstances.
I.e. for school bus stops.
Whatever.
Yeah,
school bus stops aren't permanent though. So
the residents here may disagree with you.
Okay, but anything else on if you were voting against the motion? So we have a motion to recommend positive recommendation of Exhibit 1 City Council. Ms. Harding, did you? No. Okay, so Ms. Valdez, we will take a roll call vote, please.
Okay. Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Bishop?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Hollist?
No.
And Commissioner Catmull?
No.
And Commissioner Harding?
Yes.
Okay, so that motion is 3-3. I think this might be the first time in my 6 years on the South Jordan Commission. We have a tie vote, so by rule, that motion fails. So I'm going to ask a question of legal, because it's just because it's our first one.
It didn't.
It's just a recommendation.
It's a recommendation. So does that mean it is a negative recommendation? I just want to make sure we do it right, or do we need to take another motion that would get a 4-2 vote?
It's a negative recommendation in that it failed, but it doesn't mean that you can't make a different motion on something else or just leave it as it stands.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're doing everything proper. So it is a negative recommendation. Is the commission fine with leaving it as how we voted as a 3-3 vote? So the motion was 3-3, and so the motion fails, and so that will be a negative recommendation to the city council. Which takes to the second part of this application item, which is the ordinance 2025-08, which is the park strip landscaping text amendment. Now we can have our discussion amongst that part. So I just, I don't know if anybody wants to need to be refreshed on anything that we heard about that. Obviously, we have city staff recommending a negative, for having us to make a negative recommendation to the city council on that. I had you go last time, so I'll have you go first this time.
Did you want to have any discussion on that?
Yeah, the discussion. Discussion. Sorry.
That's right. Sorry. I thought you were asking for a motion.
I can see the desire to include trees, but I think we're applying this citywide again. I think that makes it a little too broad, leaves a little too much room for us to create problems down the road and to have full rock and remove a lot of greenscape and plants that, as the city and the county and this area grows larger and larger, the less plant coverage we have, the less enjoyable life will be for all of us. So I am in agreement with the city that this is a no for me. Okay. No recommendation.
Thank you. Mr. Bishop?
I was leaning no initially, but I'm not sure what I think now. The argument with regards to the low sitting trees that cover ground, like, that makes sense to me. I'm not quite sure what to do about that, but
may I ask a clarifying question? The three kinds of trees that were referenced tonight, I would have counted them because their base goes to the ground. Would that not count for ground coverage if you're an Italian cypress or one of these evergreens where the base literally is inches off the ground?
They would count as the 50% toward the 50% coverage, but the staff's determination that we don't believe that those are trees. They are large bushes. So
and bushes can count.
Bushes don't count for tree canopy, though.
Okay, but they don't count for the tree count. All right.
Correct. They're not allowed. That particular variety of tree that she was referencing is not allowed. We have a list of street trees that are approved. Okay. And so it's on there as kind of a shrub. So it can count as a shrub, but it can't count for overall required street tree coverage.
Okay.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Bishop.
Mr. Bishop, anything else?
That was super clarifying. Thank you. That's it for me then.
Ms. Harding, anything you'd like to add or discuss? Sorry.
So my concern is we don't enforce what we've already set up. How do we address that before we already shift it to 25 when we know at 50% it's at zero?
It is my understanding that the city of South Jordan does not actively go around doing code enforcement, but if somebody calls it in or uses the portal, that they will come
as
out.
As Mr. Schindler said, there's one code enforcement officer, and so that would be a city council, I guess, budgetary decision whether to, you know, plan for that in the future with the budget and, you know, as priority.
So I haven't flipped my strip, but I have many neighbors that have. And so can someone step me through how that's approved? Like, do they have to propose certain plans to go into that percentage to know that they're approved then to flip their strip, or how does that work?
Yes, so the Flip Your Strip program is administered through our Public Works Water Department, and they have specific design criteria that you need to meet in order to qualify for those reimbursements of those expenses, and they look through those plans and approve it. At minimum, they would have to comply with city code as well.
But if you're not going for that...
There's really no permit process unless you apply for city funds.
You don't have to go through the city to do it. They could just do it. But if they're going for the reimbursement, that's when the city would see the...
But then if a neighbor does make a code complaint or city changes priorities and cracks down, then, yeah, at that point.
Just feels like we're asking the city to micromanage a lot of people and a lot of things that our time and money could be used.
Anything else? Mr. Catwell.
Favor simplicity. Oftentimes, you may not feel that way, but it's only because sometimes. Anyway, I favor simplicity, and I'm also concerned. I guess I want to make sure we stay water wise because we are completely reliant on Jordan Basin. Is it Jordan Basin Valley or
Jordan Valley Water Conservancy?
Jordan Valley Basin or Jordan, whatever it is now, but the Jordan Water things, and they seem to be very opinionated about water, which they should be. That's their specialty.
So. Mr. Schindler, it looks like you would like to add something. Oh, before I get to Ms.
Halls. You finished the Jordan Valley water is the water. Jordan Basin is sewer.
Oh, okay.
So that's... Well,
thank you for that,
that makes a lot of sense. I like Jordan water better than Jordan Basin, though. Well, maybe.
Ms. Halls.
I appreciate both services.
I know.
urban heating is real. There's a lot of benefits to vegetation in our neighborhoods as far as soil retention, water retention, all of those good things. We've made the changes that bring us into compliance with South. Oh, I just lost it. I had it.
Jordan Valley Water.
Jordan Valley Water. I'm not in favor of making any changes. We've reduced according to what they required us to do. I still think that there is value in having water rights plants in those areas. If you've walked by all of these people's yards who have flipped their strip and replaced it completely with rock, you can feel that heat. It's to me relatively unpleasant, and so I'm in favor of still having 50% vegetation, hopefully water-wise vegetation, but still having that plant growth there.
Thank you. Just for me, I'm against, you know, any type of larger tree. Having a neighborhood that's probably exhausted the entire city's sidewalk replacement budget in the last 2 weeks. I think I've seen more public works in my neighborhood than I want to. There's a risk when you get trees in there with roots and they will uproot the sidewalks, and there's a cost to the city and to all the taxpayers. And like with the previous item, you know, this applies citywide and not just for this one particular applicant. And so I got to think more, you know, more globally along with the other, you know, impacts of like changing it that's already been mentioned. So I'm in favor of a negative recommendation to city council as well. I don't think, like the last item, from hearing everyone, there will be a 3-3 vote. So I'll just, anybody, last call, and then I'll entertain a motion from anyone who'd be willing.
I will, and I'm going to read it how the staff recommended it, so please pay attention. I move that the Planning Commission recommends denial I move that the Planning Commission recommends that the City Council denies Ordinance 2025-08 Park Strip Landscaping Amendment.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Hollis. Any discussion to the motion? Questions about the motions? I will second the motion. And now any discussion to the motion?
I believe the action is not necessarily that we're approving or denying, but that we're forwarding a recommendation. Or we're failing either a positive recommendation, a negative recommendation type thing. So is that...
Are you asking me to reword it?
Well,
I can.
I'm going off of what
But staff wrote it that way.
Yeah, we're making a recommendation to deny, for City Council to deny, which I think in previous legislation...
Gotcha. Yeah. A recommendation to deny.
Yeah, so okay. I think we're good. I will pause for a second for Mr. Simonson to correct my interpretation of the motion. Okay. Seeing none, Ms. Valdez, a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Hollis.
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge.
Yes.
Commissioner Bishop.
Yes.
Commissioner Bevins.
Yes.
And Commissioner Catmull.
Yes.
And Commissioner Harding.
Yes.
Thank you. That motion for the City Council, a recommendation to deny, passes 6 in favor by the City Council. We appreciate the applicant being here this evening. We're sorry that it's probably not the news you wanted to hear, but again, we are not the final authoritative body. City Council is. We are just a recommending body. Obviously, you've heard of our concerns. You mentioned you had already been talking with the mayor and the city manager and been working with staff. So we encourage you. I don't know, Mr. Moss, do you know when this would be heard by the City Council? Is it tentatively scheduled?
We have it tentatively scheduled for May 6th, but we may modify that plan with tonight's outcome.
Okay. So thank you for that. And for the commissioners, if any of you had any items that maybe you felt need your particular council representative to be aware of that maybe we didn't memorialize in a motion, fully encourage you to do that. Okay, so that concludes our legislative public hearing items for this evening. We do have item number J, our other business, and since it is past 8, I am going to recommend that we table our Planning Commission discussion regarding the commission rules for 2025.
I will second. Is that a motion?
Well, not yet, but for the commission to review those for 2 weeks from now, so you can have most of the discussion when I'm absent.
Can we absolutely make sure Commissioner Harding has received a copy?
Yeah,
of that?
And make sure Commissioner Harding also has a chance to review those. I know Commissioner Catmull had put those together for us originally, so thank you again for that. And then you guys can have a discussion. Hopefully in 2 weeks, Commissioner Hollis?
On it.
So move.
So move.
Second. So we are going to table that. Oh, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that item is tabled. Sorry, all the legal process here.
I did want to comment on that one, actually. I'm happy it passed, but we've just been kicking it down the road for so long, I just wonder if we're ever going to get there.
I think now that we have a full commission, that's why we held off for a couple meetings,
okay,
is we wanted to make sure everybody was... in it.
I always thought it was the 8 o'clock rule that made us kick it down the road.
No. Well, that was...
We got to it a couple except times.
Last meeting.
Yeah, last meeting was...
Okay. 7.
You blame me for this one because it's my son's birthday.
Yeah, I tried to be accommodating on this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Schindler, any items for next meeting?
Yes, we have... Currently, there are 3 items on the agenda.
Are they daybreak?
2 of them are.
So. Is the 3rd one timely?
Time consuming, maybe. Let me take a look, because I think I still have it open.
With your crystal ball.
So we don't have to kick it down the road to a next meeting.
If I could get this to work. Okay. It is... Oh, wrong one. It is... It probably would be, it's going to be easy to, it's a conditional use permit.
For a barn?
For a
drive-through.
No, for a massage therapy business that's locating in the complex just on the other side of the library over there. And
that zone
requires a conditional use permit.
You mean the Gale Center Library or the current library?
Current library.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm an old-time resident here.
Library.
That's my library. Whenever it says library, I think Gale Center.
And it's the same zone as City Hall and everything is in, and same zone as the massage place out there is. just that if she would have been in the same building as the current one, that because the massage therapy condition use runs for the land, with the land, but this one's brand new building, so it's...
Okay, well, we'll probably
she's not happy with us either.
And I didn't make sure, Chair Hall, so you, sorry, I still call you Chair Hall. Are you okay chairing next meeting?
Yes.
Okay, and so I will send you any comments I might have on some of the of the Planning Commission rules. So don't vote me out of office in 2 weeks, I hope. But anything else from the commission, from staff?
Well, like I made a mistake. I didn't look onto the second page of this thing. There is a legislative item also. It's currently is the Drinking Water Source Protection Text Amendment. That's Jordan Valley Water is basically the applicant on that.
That's going to take hours.
But I don't know if it'll take too long either. It doesn't, I don't think it's going to be too controversial with anybody, so it probably won't take very long.
Perfect. And now anything from the commissioners that we missed?
Good. I move that we adjourn.
I second, we're adjourned.